Maybe. Springsteen, Radio Nowhere, and this is Truth Quest with Melody, and my next guest is Walter Burian. Are you there?
Yes, Melody.
Okay, it looks like I've got to turn up the level a little bit more.
Is that better?
Yeah, it is. And I'm going to let you describe your background here, and he's a return guest, but he has a great message, and I think the information that this man is single-handedly taken on is utmost importance to all of us. Okay, Walter?
I want to see your comprehension on the topic. I want you to tell me what you consider to be important about the issue.
Well, first of all, the fact that many of us have probably never even looked at one of these things, and it's kind of like, you know, having a checkbook and never looking at it and knowing, you know, where your money's coming and going. And this is what we...
But one of what things?
The budgets of our governments and agencies like that.
Well, see, you're mentioning budgets. If the government wants you to look at budgets. But what is the one thing they're hiding, Melody?
Income that's not on there.
Well, the...
Or not...
The phrase is the Comprehensive Annual Financial Report. Just as a corporation such as AT&T, IBM, Xerox would have an annual financial report, and if you had any stock ownership in a corporation. It's mandatory by SEC law that they give you their annual financial report each year. You know, any corporation may have a budget, you know, for the year, what they're planning on spending and X amount of money they're planning on making, but the annual financial report shows the cumulative wealth built up over the decades, the grouping of all of the operations of the corporation, subdivision corporations, investment income, the whole nine yards.
Right, the budget is, it doesn't, I mean, yes, this tells what the bottom line is.
Right, you could have a corporation that had a bad year on their normal business functioning. They may actually be in the red by several million dollars. But when you look at their annual financial report, the sum of all of their operations and the return on their investment funds and the like, they may have, you know, $100 million profit. So if a shareholder was told, well, our budget report shows we're operating on a negative, and the annual financial report was never mentioned to show that they were operating at a substantial profit when all things were considered, the prime directors of that corporation would be indicted after an SEC investigation. We have government on all levels, city, county, and state, operating under the same principle. They're promoting selectively created budget reports and never mentioning their annual financial report, which shows the gross income. When IRS audits you, the number one thing that they want to know is, what is your gross income? That's their starting ground. Government does not want you to know their gross income because they're making substantially more than anyone is aware of.
Do you think that's possibly why they kind of like having the public-private partnership situation? Does that help that out?
Are you talking about trying to sell off the enterprise operations?
Right.
Well, you've heard the expression organized crime, correct?
Mm-hmm.
Organized crime is basically extortion of money from the population through a legal enterprise. And when you look at what government's doing, plain language, they're extorting money from the population through whatever means and tactics, and much of their operations would be considered illegal enterprises based on non-disclosure to the public. If the public ever knew what government had become involved in, they never would have allowed it. But when you look at an annual financial report now, you know, the public thinks that government survives off of taxation. They think 100% of the income of government is taxation. When you look at the annual financial report, only one-third of the gross income is taxation. Two-thirds of the gross income is return on investment funds and enterprise operations. So with two-thirds of the gross income being generated outside of the view of the population, this is why government never mentions their annual financial report on the city level, county level, school district level, state level. And this all started back in 1946, became the standard in the 70s, and the annual financial report is the holy grail of accounting for all local governments. If you do a search on Google, now government added one extra word onto their annual financial report. They call theirs the Comprehensive Annual Financial Report, or the acronym CAFR. If you go to Google, put in CAFR in search, you'll get anywhere between 3 to 7 million hits now. When I first started with National Disclosure in June of 98, if you did a search on Google for CAFR, you'd get about 10 hits. So we've been effective on bringing forward disclosure as to the biggest game in town. but you still have a 100% blackout from the syndicated media, controlled education, and both political parties, which were included in on the development of the annual financial report for the last 45 years. They know not to mention a peep, not to mention a word, because the silence is golden rule has been extremely lucrative.
Why don't you give a little bit of your background and why you got into putting this information forward?
Well, primarily back in New Jersey in 1990, a governor by the name of Jim Florio got elected on a new tax platform. As soon as he got into office, a $2.8 billion tax increase, the largest in the state's history, was, you know, put together by the prior administration, but he could have vetoed it. He didn't. Well, the public was not, they were not happy campers. There were two DJs from one of the local radio stations, 101.5 FM, John and Ken, who started doing rabble-rousing to increase their ratings on the tax increase, taking calls from listeners on examples of waste and spending in government. I was listening for the first couple of days, and I heard people calling in with examples of $5,000, $15,000. The highest figure I heard was $85,000. I pulled out the budget report for the state of New Jersey for 1990, which covered 89's figures, and called into the show, read out the bottom line figures, which on the budget report showed $11 billion on budget, $6 billion off budget, total service budget $17 billion, and showed net available about $23.5 billion. I said, come on, guys, you're missing the whole point. State is dealing with billions of dollars. If there's fraud, waste, and misspending taking place, it's taking place in tens of millions, if not hundreds of millions. The DJ challenged us to start a organization to repeal the tax increase. 10 of us got together and incorporated a group called Hands Across New Jersey. And with the help of John and Ken rabble-rousing around the clock, we had 63,000 volunteers in about 3 months, organized every county in New Jersey. And had our first rally down in Trenton, where we had all of the people converge from the shore points onto Trenton. Approximately about 115,000 cars converged on Trenton, effectively shutting down the city in one big traffic jam. But I was a commodity trading advisor for about 14 years. I was one of the first tenants of the World Trade Center. Did a national news line on gold and treasury bonds and so forth on one of the market services, and big numbers didn't bother me, so I took over looking at the budget, revenue, and finance for the organization. Well, when I looked through the budget report, I noticed all the cash cow generators of state government were not inclusive on the budget report. New Jersey Turnpike, Grand State Parkway, Port Authority, New York, New Jersey, 69 autonomous agencies. I didn't see any large return from investment funds, and I said, this is not the complete showing. This is only a selectively created grouping. I said there has to be two sets of accounting here. And the director of the budget at the time was Richard Keevy. He was on vacation until the following Tuesday of that week. I called his lower assistant saying, hi, this is Walter Burian. I'm working on a report for Richard. Have to have it done by Tuesday when he gets back from vacation. I need all the figures on the autonomous agency accounts, interest accounts, investment accounts. And he goes, oh, you want the comprehensive annual financial report. Bing, first time I heard that before. Got it that Friday. Started crunching numbers. You know, the only concern I had were how much was in the kitty, so to say, total cash gross receipts and total investments. Well, it showed about $188 billion and liquid investment assets. And I started looking for the total cash gross receipts, all agencies, all departments, all sources. Found it on page 174 under cash additions from all agencies, departments, and sources. This would be federal grants, investment income, tax income, you know, the whole nine yards. Here's a state with a service budget of approximately $17 billion, who is bringing in total cash gross receipts, $83,799,000,000 in cash. I learned the definition of syndicated organized crime right there on the spot, and the principle of operation, which was, and I think it was a profit center, large investment fund that generated billions, totally restricted by statute. They created their own laws. The Foxes wrote their own laws, and how many hens they could eat in that house. And the public didn't have a clue. And at first I thought this was a very exclusive game where there were some key upper-level players. And I found out the report was sent to all the editors of all the papers, deans of the colleges, the CEOs of all the networks. And I started smelling the biggest effort for cooperative non-disclosure I'd ever seen in my lifetime. And that is basically how I got involved. And I was kind of furious that they would play that game. When I started looking at the composite takeover by government through the investment funds, government had taken it over all of the industry groups by investment, the stock market, the insurance companies, the banks. And as I started adding up the wealth held by government, I realized real quickly that the entire wealth of the private sector was insignificant in comparison. Look at the Fortune 500 companies. Microsoft, about 83% owned by composite government funds, IBM, Xerox, all of them, up around 75 to 85%. Jump ahead into the future here. Let's go to 2001, 2002, 2003, 2004. I spotlight on my front page, CAFR1.com. I put a copy of the New York State Retirement Fund CAFR up there, a listing of investments. You can download and see exactly what they're invested in. It's about $144 billion right now. Just one CAFR out of 84,000 produced each year. It's a big one, but it's a good showing of holdings. As you go down through the list, you'll see the number one profit makers. 400, 500, 600% profits in order. The oil companies, the pharmaceutical companies, the war industry groups, the banks. Slight tad bit of conflict of interest, he says. You have government, you know, on the upper level, every one of their policies has been based on wealth generation for themselves, without $1 going back to directly support the budgetary basis.
But they're not only... They're not only disclosing this up front on the CAFRs, then they're out there in the public and on the media proclaiming that, you know, we're, you know, essentially bankrupt. Is that correct?
Well, they're showing budget reports. And my favorite analogy, which is also true, your listeners. Picture if each one of the listeners had a 12-year-old boy. And they gave him carte blanche to write his own allowance check each week. And he made $1,200 a week. Within no time, the 12-year-old would be cutting a check for $1,000 a week. He'd have $200 left over. And if you said to him you're going to cut him back to $800 a week, he'd yell, he'd holler, he'd scream, he'd kick. He'd use any logic available to him to justify how a 12-year-old could not survive on $800 a week. There's no difference here. You just have bigger boys, sharper players, and they're ruthless. And they will kill you if you get in their way.
And that, and you might go ahead and explain a little bit what's happened to you on trying to disclose this information.
No, it was targeted on several, you know. The first thing operation will do is look to see if you have any thing they can indict or arrest you on. And it'll take you out in 2 seconds and put you out of business if you're confronting them. If you're squeaky clean, then they'll start hitting you on your family and friends. In my case, I got hit on my family and my children over the last 10 years. But it's irrelevant due to the factor that it's happening to thousands of people. You know, I was watching on the news yesterday. That one Mormon group out in Texas.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of like the Amish. Very quaint, simple, basic, wanting to a life in exclusion and, you know, good principle and family. It irked a few people, so they took them out. They just went in and grabbed 400 children, and it looks like on a false report, which they probably generated themselves just so they could have an excuse to go in and take them out. In plain language, the word is take them out. And if it was 100 years ago and any group went in and took 400 children and disrupted an entire family, you'd see a civil war start overnight. Here, through the arrogance of the government officials, they feel they can do whatever they want at any time they want. We have people being taxed where they lose their homes, little old ladies being thrown out in the street. If you had a $5 million home and there was property tax in your venue, and for some reason your entire cash flow went down to zero and you couldn't pay your $65,000 tax bill, they'd come in and throw you out in the street and walk off with your $5 million home, steal it from you.
Now, is that something that...
If you were operating a business and you weren't mm-hmm. paying your taxes, they would shut you down. Al Capone, back in the 30s, used to charge 25% to the businesses to continue doing business. If they balked about paying 25%, he would say, well, you're now paying 35%. If you don't pay me within 10 days, I'm going to fire bomb you and put you out of business. And he would. There's not too much difference on what the government does nowadays and what Al Capone used to do back in the 30s. The public, as they were masterfully entertained, allowed government, that 12-year-old spoiled kid, to come in, take more and more and more and more until they were taking basically everything that we had. The players, you have a lot of government employees that are collecting big paychecks and multi-million-dollar pensions, and their arrogance factor is right through the roof. And if you bother them, they will take you out. They will steal your property, steal your children, attack your friends. It's organized crime based on what they've been doing and their conduct.
Essentially, they did that to you.
I've seen them do it to hundreds of people. That's, you know, myself, mm-hmm. I did not have a large net worth. If I had $100 million net worth, you would not be talking to me right now. They would have considered me to be a threat and had the ability to retaliate against them, so they would have then used tactics to destroy my net worth and put me under altogether. I've seen that happen to a few people with $100 million net worths. That bucked the system.
You had,
yeah.
Is that the one of them that you were just recently had?
J.W. Zadar.
Mm-hmm.
When I first started with National Disclosure in June of 98, in 2000, I was looking for a backer to implement what I called the CAFR 1 plan, which would be starting a TRF fund, tax retirement fund, for a county that would include the city, school districts, and the county,
mm-hmm.
whereby you would make them totally self-sufficient without any taxation needed whatsoever. Government, on one of, everyone's heard of government pension funds. What most people don't realize, government pension funds, the employees are, it's strictly participatory. Yeah, most private sector pension funds, you own the money in the pension fund. Local government pension funds are strictly participatory. It's like buying a train ticket, you know, to go from point A to point B. You can ride the train, but you don't own one piece of the train. And government has inflated their pension funds to the nth degree, which gave them the ability to take over industry groups, corporations, and in fact now to financially take over some small countries. And large. The composite government pension funds, which you will never see consolidated in totals anywhere, being that there's 84,000 local governments now in the country, comes out to approximately $28 to $30 trillion for local and federal. With that equity base, it's a power base. They can buy up any corporation, any industry group, and destroy or make anyone they want through the use of those funds. But they've done such an excellent job on the takeover, including investments with the banks and the insurance companies and the control of the stock market, If you restructured any local government to operate under the same principle, but instead of paying a salary and benefits at retirement, where the fund was designed to pay the ongoing budgetary obligations, where all taxation could be phased out, they could be done overnight through administrative application. They've already shown they can do it by their own exemplary record of management of their own funds for 65 years. Well, JW, I met with him down in Tempe, Arizona, back in 2000, after speaking to him several times, and you know, sat down for 4.5 hours, briefed him on all points, the importance of getting this done due to the unrestrained corruption that was building up within government, where they're having a free-for-all, building up their little empires, personal, through the use of these funds, unbeknownst to the public. But if a TRF fund was created, the public would be watching real close, and it would open up the reality of the investment arena to the public that government now and currently held. But after about 4.5 hours, I said, JW, you know, what I require is a heavyweight to step forward to make this happen. I couldn't do it myself. I, you know, was too loaded in capital, and he had the ability to do it. He looked back and he goes, well, Walter, you found your heavyweight. I'm committing to $3.5 million now. I'll give you a cap of $7 million to get it done. He did a $3.5 million transfer to Phoenix, dedicated for the TRF fund to create it, draft a prospectus, target one county, implement the program, get it passed by the population, and thus having the first blueprint up on the drawing board in operation for distribution across the country for all other cities, counties, and school districts to follow. Well, about five weeks after the transfer, and before the money went towards the TRF fund, the feds came in with a SWAT team raid on them on a fronted-up SEC sting. JW was running an association called the Isaacson Society, and also had an offshore investment trust. And he had been pitching people for years to get their net worth outside of government control and view through offshore management, doing fractional reserve banking. JW was a wheeler and dealer from a few decades back. He was one of the first four top people in Amway Corporation. And the first 5 years of kicking off Amway, it pulled in probably about $34 million, so he was a very wealthy man. And the offshore investment trust, what they did was they had sent in an FBI undercover person who had gotten involved in a stock swindle a few years earlier. And they gave him a choice: go to jail for 7 years or infiltrate a few Patriot groups which were operating offshore investment funds, were looking to target them and take them out. Well, he got in there and found out most of the operations, and the Attorney General's office targeted JW, and they came in, did a SWAT team raid on him, confiscated all of his assets, his land, his property, his vehicles, his bank accounts, froze the funds, investments offshore, which had about $50 million in it. The investors, by the way, when they came in doing this little sting operation on the offshore investment trust, they did not have one complaint from one investor.
Now, well, what he was doing, was that considered something that was legal, or did they...
Well, what he had structured was on the offshore investment trust that they set up the society, as they called it, on religious grounds, and thus claiming exemption from registration with the SEC on the fund. The SEC, Securities and Exchange Commission, said, no, we don't care, and we're not going to give you an exemption. You have to register the fund and or cease and desist. JW told them no, and he kept debating the issue on religious grounds. Well, they then pushed for an indictment The primary points in their indictment was J.W. was a wheeler and dealer, and he was trying to get this to grow as fast as possible. He had offered the sales agents that were, you know, getting investors to the fund a 25% finder's fee. And, you know, that was one of the points that the feds put in their indictment. Well, I used to work for Merrill Lynch for about a year. And Merrill Lynch, on some of their high-spec venture projects, had a 25% front-end load. So there's nothing outside of the ordinary there. So did most of the other brokerage houses. You know, it was about the top amount that they would take as a front-end load on any investment, but there was nothing not out of the ordinary from what JW was doing.
Mm-hmm.
On the investment trust, he was basically doing fractional reserve banking, which the standard for fractional reserve banking is between 65 to 140% per year return.
Wow.
Do you understand what fractional reserve banking is?
Mm-hmm.
All right, and so he was, you know, they were quoting those rates of return, so the feds put in their indictment. And it was all for saying that they would get 120% returns, making it sound like that was impossible. Well, J.W., as I mentioned, very wealthy man. He spent a lot of money, and a lot of the guys were wheeling and dealing, and there was a strong cash flow coming in. And the feds came in and saying, well, look, they're spending money. Yeah, they were. But when the feds came in with the indictment, froze everything, a lot of the people that were raising a lot of funds, which were getting their 25%, the feds came in targeting that 25% as if it was being stolen from people. It was not. It was their 25%. Feds came in and confiscated all of their assets and property. J.W. was put in jail for 3 years, pending trial. Then they had their little fronted-up trial in Seattle, Washington, and he was convicted to 30 years. He's now sitting in a federal penitentiary in Atlanta, Georgia.
The TRF, what is that? I mean, is that something, are there a lot of those over here, in the country, or...
What a TRF is it has not been created yet. I mean, they took J.W., but it was about to get created. And when they took J.W. out, the $3.5 million, I never saw $1 of it. And the person that they had put into the group, his name was Sean Talbot Rice. He disappeared and never got indicted, no mention of him in the indictments, even though he was one of the hit. Moved his way into being one of the key players.
Mm-hmm.
The bottom line was they took J.W. out. Had a second backer step forward a year later. And same thing. They targeted him and took him out. The bottom line is it's organized crime. These guys are wheeling and, in government, they're wheeling and dealing, cutting their little deals under the table, unbeknownst to the public, walking off with billions and billions and billions of dollars, backing, anyway, say, for example, you and I were congressmen or senators or county board of supervisors, city attorneys, judges, and we were on the inside track. There are hundreds of different investment funds that government is operating, self-insurance funds, pension funds, bond repayment accounts. There's a whole myriad of different investment vehicles they've created over the years with anywhere from $100 million to several billion dollars in them. And when you go to the pension funds, you're talking hundreds of billions in some cases. And if we're on the inside track and we know a few of the investment fund managers, and say we wanted to build a 1,200-unit condominium complex on the beach in Sydney, Australia, we could approach one of the managers saying, well, we want to build this 1,200-unit complex in Sydney, Australia. We need, $55 million. Can you invest in our operation? And he goes, well, we're good friends with him. We've built up our relationship. And, he goes, well, you're going to have to prepare a prospectus. It's going to have to cover point A to Z. Everything has to be letter perfect. You have to offer us the correct rate of return we're accepting right now. which, by the way, is 4.5%, so he tells us what we have to offer. And he says, well, in fact, here's three prospectuses we approved last year along the same lines of what you're looking to do. So we go out and we incorporate a company called New Zealand Coastal Properties, Inc., the New Zealand Corporation. We list our two accountants as the CEO and treasurer for the corporation. We keep our name out of it and cut a private deal with the two accountants. We present our prospectus. We offer 4.8%. He approves it. We get our $55 million, build our condominium complex, which generates $11 million a year, and we pay back the funds, say, about $4 million a year, $5 million a year, thus netting $6 million. In other words, we just set ourselves up for life. If we're starting a corporation, same thing. We pitch to get a few of the investment fund managers to fund our corporation. We may use our influence to get budgetary funds, tax revenue, supporting our corporation to guarantee a profit, guarantee success. And again, we're now multimillionaires and on the inside track, set for life. You have so many people greasing their pockets from all levels, the public never stood a chance in hell. You have the mentality between these guys, just like that 12-year-old spoiled kid, where you gave him carte blanche to write his own allowance check. You're making $1,200 a week. He's now cutting a check for $1,100 a week. He's saying, here, live off $100. We're spending your $1,100. And as I mentioned, only one-third of the gross income now is tax income. So two-thirds of government's gross income the public didn't even know existed. They're funneling money out of the public's pocket, not just by taxation, but by the public's own losses in the stock market. You know, when there's you play the stock market, there's a winner and a loser. Government has taken over the stock market by investment, so the public's never stood a chance in hell against that kind of competition. The government has enough money to roll the markets up or down. And they're playing the derivative market on tunes of trillions of dollars, so they can make money when it goes down, they can make money when it goes up, and they control these fluctuations. So they're, if you look at any one of the investment funds for government, constantly in the black, including after 9/11. In fact, the 9/11 event probably increased the government's own investment funds within the first year by about $3.5 trillion. Because they were playing the market in the correct position. I guess they got lucky. They had their largest short position on right before 9/11 occurred. They were the number one profit makers off the event. And the only thing the public hears is, there was a $5 million put option in the airlines, which no one claimed. These must be the people behind 9/11. Well, that $5 million put option was chump change on chump change on chump change. The government investment funds on their short derivative positions easily made $2 trillion in the first 10 days internationally. You hear about, corporations outsourcing for the last 15 years. Guess what? Government owns those corporations by stock ownership. They were promoting to the corporations to outsource, thus being that they own the stock in those corporations, taking advantage of the cheap labor. The profits would roll in 400-600% profits. The war in Iraq, Afghanistan, so forth. As I mentioned, look at the New York State Retirement Fund cap or list of investments, which you can download from my front page. Number one profit maker, oil companies. People complain about the oil companies. Those oil companies, Exxon, Mobil, they're raping us blind. $100 a barrel crude and $3.50 at the gas pumps. Well, who owns the oil companies? Composite government, local and federal. In most cases, about 80% of those oil companies are owned by government through stock ownership.
So it's to the government's advantage to have money, the gasoline high
prices. Mm-hmm. Right. So now they're funneling money, it's not just taxation. They're funneling money out of the public's pocket through manipulating policy. If there was not a conflict of interest with government owning the majority of the oil companies, right now a barrel of crude would probably be about $40 a barrel, 35. It's not, because when you look at the profits that government's making by their ownership of the oil companies, 500-600%.
Well, then isn't it kind of to the protection of the company to have their people go into the government aspects to kind of watch over to make sure that the funds are moved in the way they want them to be?
Not really understanding your question.
Okay. In other words, it's a perfect situation of fascism, because the guys, in order to protect their company, need to be part of the government, and the government is, I mean, that's why you have that open door policy of them going back and forth being.
A close relationship, but keep in mind, stockholders have proxy votes. You've heard of the expression, if you own 51% of the company, you own it. Well, if the, you know, there are thousands of separate local and federal governments that own one corporation, they're all independent of each other. You won't find one city, county, or state owning, you know, 50% of one corporation. You'll find thousands of pooled local governments and federal governments owning, you know, 75-80% of the company. And the bottom line there is, even though they're all independents, there are pooled management groups, maybe handling several thousand cities, counties, and a few states, where the under association, they're all members of specific associations. It consolidates the control through centralized management. So technically, even though you may have thousands of different local governments owning one corporation, delegated authority may be in a small grouping of managers that can exercise the proxy votes for all of those local governments. So technically, as a primary stockholder, they could replace the entire board of directors if they so desired. Now, like an Enron, you know, that caused government a big, very big problem, because one of the primary investors with Enron was the government investment funds. Now, you heard of Orange County also back years ago, how they supposedly were going to go bankrupt for their managers were kind of trading outside of the gang, had a little slap happy and lost about $1.3 billion trading derivatives. Well, Orange County was crying bankruptcy until someone produced their CAFR and said, look, you have $18.5 billion in profitable investments. They were only talking about their $1.3 billion loss. Once someone brought up the total holdings, all of a sudden Orange County disappeared off the news and no bankruptcy. And the gang started monitoring all the local governments a little more closely, because they didn't appreciate Orange County drawing attention to the investment funds. Yeah, and also government, back in 82, they started a offshore investment trust where they recommended to all local government managers to participate in. CalPERS kicked it off, the California Retirement Fund Management Group. They created an offshore investment trust where they started pooling together all local government pension funds for participation, and then they didn't have to invest in the dollar. They could invest in all other foreign currencies. They could invest in companies in China, Russia, Mexico, and it wouldn't be as evident as if, you know, the management group was here in the United States being monitored more closely by the SEC and the public. So the bottom line is they took over. It's not like they're trying to take over. They already have. You know, they started the international takeover probably in the late 70s, early 80s was when they started. and the Mexican market back in the 80s, the composite government investment funds, they devalued the peso, ran down through the floor, and then came in and bought up everything. Soviet bloc countries, after Gorbachev went democratic, after, I'm sure, conferring with the upper-level management in the United States, the United States investment fund sank in about $1.5 trillion into the Soviet bloc countries. China, 97 to 2000, we sank in another $1.5 trillion into China. And everyone hears about the $1.5 trillion in U.S. dollars that China is holding and how, oh, they could destroy the U.S. economy. Well, the United States has government has probably about a market value of about $6 trillion in ownership within China at this point in time. In fact, last year, China cut off any further investments from U.S. government investment funds. They just froze any further because, you know, the United States governments were taking over the Chinese economy. And when China froze any further investments, the next day, the stock market dropped 650 points in the United States. If you remember back when the stock market clipped 650 a year ago, that was the night before is when China made that move. And also India, the same afternoon with China, announced that they were going to curtail any further expansion in U.S. government derivative trading in India because the United States government was taking over the marketplace in India.
So are they doing that here, too, or positioning that same thing to be taking place here?
They've already taken over.
Okay.
If you look at Microsoft Corporation, they own 83%. Xerox, IBM, AT&T.
No, I guess what I'm trying to say is...
ExxonMobil.
I guess what I'm trying to say is with what's going on with the dollar.
Yeah. Well, keep in mind, when they do you know what the word diversification means?
Mm-hmm.
The U.S. government diversified outside of the dollar going back into the 80s. A lot of their investments were in Mexico, South America, China, Russia, Yugoslavia, Poland, Thailand. And the investments were held in the local currency. So as the dollar went down, their investments were going up by currency exchange rates. So they were making a profit as the dollar went down in that respect.
So you're saying that it's to their advantage to have the dollar drop in value?
Yeah.
Oh.
On those international investments. And they, based on the derivative game that they're playing, in 2000, Alan Greenspan has quoted in the Wall Street Journal, he said he was concerned about the ever-growing and currently $80 trillion a year international derivative market. Well, currently, the value of the derivative market, they've knocked it up to about $500 trillion. Government is the number one player in the derivatives market. They control those derivatives, which are, futures, stocks, stocks, puts and calls. They've advanced forward currency transactions. And the composite U.S. government investment funds can roll the markets in any direction they so desire, liquidating everybody of their money back and forth. I gave an example on silver because a lot of the silver is one of my specialties. And say, for example, in the middle of the night tonight, George Bush decides to launch a full-scale assault on Iran, and it leads to a nuclear exchange in 1 hour. And everybody who follows silver goes, oh, my God, silver's going to jump through to $45 an ounce. And when you buy on the futures market using derivatives, you're using leverage of about 1%. Yeah, so for every dollar silver moves, it's equal to about 5,000 picked up per contract, 5,000 ounces. And you can... trade a contract with about $3,500. So you catch a $10 move, that's $50,000 real quick. So if everyone says, oh, my God, silver's going to jump up to $45, and, a whole bunch of people from the public jump in, they bought 400,000 contracts. Open interest on silver usually is about 140,000, 160,000. So 400,000 is a massive quantity. Now, that just in itself would cause silver to jump up to $40 an ounce. But if the composite government investment funds came in and sold 400,001 contracts, guess what? The price is going down. And those 400,000 people that jumped in there buying are going to get burnt. And the only reason they're going to get burnt is because there was somebody with a lot more money than they had to drive the price down. So government has been jumping in and out of the marketplace, whether it be on gold, silver, currencies, interest rates, controlling exactly the price where they want it, either higher or lower.
So were they? So how would that apply to maybe like in the Bear Stearns case?
Well, Bear Stearns, you know, the housing bubble and the free for all that was going on created some pretty sloppy investment vehicles, which all of a sudden blew up in their face. They were trading these mortgages that they're writing to people who really could not pay them back, and then after they wrote the mortgage, then they would sell them and trade them, you know, and collect the cash for the instrument after they sold it, and they'd have no more liability, and the person who bought them, you know, if it started to go into default, would be stuck. When they traded these vehicles, items, you know, per mortgage, they weren't transferring title. So a lot of the people that were holding the paper had no clear remedy to collect. So a lot of the people that, probably about 20% of the people that had these mortgages, you know, when the banks went to foreclose, they came back saying, show me clear title. Guess what? Banks didn't have it. They may have bought it from another bank or another investment house. They were holding paper saying that there was a $600,000 mortgage, but they had no title transferred. Big problem. So, you know, it was a bubble. And Bear Stearns kind of got burned. But you have to realize when government comes in bailing out Bear Stearns, if you take a look at the total investments that Bear Stearns is managing, they're probably managing 60-65% of their equity is government funds, city, county, state, school district. So when the government comes in bailing out Bear Stearns, they're bailing out themselves. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
And the public sits there not any the wiser because the public doesn't know the look or doesn't comprehend the degree and scope of government ownership. Insurance companies, primary investor within the insurance companies. Government, half of the rate you pay on your insurance policies goes back to government to satisfy their investment income with those insurance companies. The banks, when you borrow money to buy a house or get a credit card, and you think you're borrowing private sector funds, look down these different CAFRs, especially pension funds, because on the government pension funds, it's mandatory they list each individual investment, when it was purchased, what was paid for it, and the current market value. After you get done through listing of equities, you know, corporations, you'll see $8.5 billion, Citicorp Mortgage Division, $2.2 billion, Credit Card Division, Manufacturers Hanover, you know, $5.7 billion, Mortgage Division. The number one investor with the banks is government.
Okay.
Their credit card and mortgage division. So, you know, when people think about borrowing money from the government on a mortgage, you know, people are familiar with like VA, Fannie Mae, Ginny Mac, and so forth, Freddie Mac, Ginny Mae. They're not aware that the private banks are lending out government funds by investment. So government didn't just take over the insurance industry, they took over the banking industry by investment. The entire wealth of the private sector now is insignificant in comparison to the composite government investment funds. Now, just like a spoiled little child, and as the free-for-all was going on, government kept expanding, expanding, expanding. And this is why you see on their budgetary basis, well, we're short here, hundreds of millions, we're short here. And they were always over-expanding their investment funds. Like in New Jersey, you'll have the governor now, Corzine, who used to be a director for one of the investment houses. We're running at a great shortfall, and we're going to have to pay half of our income into the pension funds to meet our pension fund obligations. Sheesh. And the public, you know, public bites there. I mean, the pension funds are so overinflated for the government employees. And, in fact, in many cases, the government employees are not even benefiting due to the fact that they're strictly participatory. All the local government is doing is expanding these balances because they own the money. The employees do not own the money.
So what would you do to remedy this? Is, you know, what can the public do?
Well, that's a multiple choice answer there. You can do it the easy way or the hard way. The hard way is going in and administratively remodifying government. Number one, downsizing. Number two, the TRF fund, where you can phase out all taxation and downsize government at the same time. This way, you can phase out taxation for all time to come. But then you're dealing with organized crime. These guys are bloated, fat. They're cutting their deals under the table. They like things exactly the way they are. They're extremely wealthy from cutting their deals under the table within government. And, you're going to be confronting organized crime. You know, they'll kill you. They'll take you out. And plus, the syndicated media is in 100% symbiotic relationship with government on the investment funds and the money and the cash flow. So not a peep, not a word, not a mention from the syndicated media. The media can bury any project just by total omission or by slanting a news story to make the public say, oh, we don't want to do that because of what the media said. I've had so many people, and when I first came out with National Disclosure on the composite wealth of government and the CAFR and so forth, and the government was holding back their annual financial report and promoting selectively created budget reports, most people, when they first heard that, no, it can't be true, that's got to be false. You know, it's their own egos could not allow them to believe it happened, because how could they do that right under my own nose? I would have seen it happening. Well, look at the money involved. You're not intended to see what's happening. There's too much money involved. They're going to make sure you don't see what's happening, which means 100% control over the syndicated media, controlled education, both political parties.
So we can't even do that we couldn't even do that on a local level then? Start remedying the situation.
Yes. Oh. If you had enough force and did it quick enough where they couldn't stop you. As I mentioned, J.W. Zadar, he was going to step forward. He said to me, Walter, you know, I'm a very wealthy man, and I've seen what government's developed into, and if I can't fight him, who can? It's my obligation, it's my duty to step forward here and make this happen. Well, he stepped forward to make it happen, and they took him out. Period. Slammed him. He had money. He was wealthy. They moved on him quickly to make sure he was stopped cold. Second backer stepped forward. He had money. He was wealthy. He could make it happen. They moved on him to take him out. Picture a CEO of a large corporation. Spent a lot of money, and he goes, this is not right, and I want to change this. I'm going to get involved. Well, number one, in most cases, probably government owns that corporation through stock ownership. They could bury him in a year. They could front up a SEC indictment saying he was doing this, that, or the other thing, and take him out. He'll end up in jail for 30 years. He knows it.
Okay, so then you're kind of pretty much saying that it's maybe kind of hopeless?
I've always been an undying optimist. The
I mean, you can't think it's that, or you wouldn't.
Going back to the people when they first learned about this, you know, at first they couldn't, you know, believe it because their own egos would not allow them to. But after they looked, you know, if you do a search, like I said, now on Google, you get 5 to 6 million hits on Kaepernick. That was effective, but still 100% blackout on the mention from the syndicated media, both political parties and controlled education. It's right there in front of everyone's face. Mm-hmm. But with the total vacuum of not a mention, not a peep, not a word from the syndicated media, both political parties and organized education, it's kind of that expression, if a tree fell in the forest and no one saw it fall, did it actually make a sound? Yeah. It fell. Yes, it did, but no one heard it. And, you know, government and the media intentionally creates this vacuum, and so the public, you know, doesn't have a clue. And they constantly masterfully entertain the public or distract them with garbage to make sure that business as usual continues unabated.
So, and essentially then at least we brought a little light to what's going on, because it's getting to the point where we need to get finished for the evening. But I'd like to have you back on again sometime, Walter. And
well, going back to the people that once they realized what was going on,
mm-hmm.
they'd all call me up and say, it's too late, it's too big, we can't do anything about this. And I would say, stop rewinding. It took 65 years for them to create this structure and do the takeover of everything. I said 65 years is a snap of the finger time-wise. With unified action and the right circumstances, the whole thing can change in 10 years, and we can have taxation phased out in this country, downsize government by 50%, and regain ownership of the country. But it's going to require a very solid focus and some pretty sharp you know, characters to make it happen with, you know, good resources, because they're going to be up against the largest organized syndicate on the face of the planet, which is our own composite government, which is now turned into basically a, you know, communistic fascist, you know, machine.
Okay.
Keep in mind that 95% of the government employees don't have a clue either. You know, they're just doing their job, getting their salary, and planning their retirement on their hefty payouts from the pension funds. You know, so they're just seeing a few trees in the forest. Very few government employees actually realize the scope of what government has developed into.
Well, I need to go ahead and wind down for the evening here, Walter, and I really appreciate you coming on the program and again, enlightening the public as to what is going on with our government funds out there. And anything closing there?
Well, just so that we know we made a difference here, your listeners, if they go to my website, CAFR1.com, CAFR1.com, right at the top is my email address. Let me know you listened to the show and that you understood what was said, or if you have any questions, just bang out an email and let me know.
Well, great. And, again, I thank you very much. And there's a lot more information on that site. Doesn't that also have all the states, links to the states on their CAFRs? And,
yeah, I probably built one of the largest consolidated download directories for comprehensive annual financial reports. I'm from Arizona, so there's a big red staples button. If you click on it, it goes into a download directory of different CAFRs. If you go to Arizona, there'll be, you know, city CAFRs, school district CAFRs, pension fund CAFRs, enterprise CAFRs, and I have almost all of the state CAFRs for all of the states up there. California, I have, you know, a few also for the cities and the counties,
okay.
School districts.
Okay, well, I do need to say goodnight for the evening, Walter, and thank you again for coming on the program. And next is Joe Frank, and this is KHENLP 106.9 Salida. Good night.
Yep. You have a great night there, Melody.
Okay. And why?